is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans Monday AFC Championship Edition. Jared and the GM will be live in Kansas City this weekend, and we will have shows on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as we get set for the first AFC Championship game, GM, since I was in the seventh grade. I put up on Instagram, because I was at the Titan facility today at the Mike Vrabel press conference, and they have each team picture up there on the wall. And I took a picture of the 2002 Titans, the last team to ever make it to the AFC Championship. I put on my Instagram story at @TheJaredStillman, and I circled in the very middle of all the players is this bald guy in a suit. And I circled it, and I said, does anybody recognize the bald man in the middle in the suit? And that was the architect of that team, the GM himself, Mr. Floyd Reese. Now, I will say this. Remember when I spent all year talking about 12-4? Kept saying 12-4 all offseason?
Right.
This is what I was talking about.
No,
a team of this caliber.
No, you weren't talking about. No, nice try.
The championship game.
Nice,
and
nice
you
try.
Laughed every time I said AFC championship was the peak of what this team could do. You laughed at me. And so you keep laughing, but here they are in the AFC championship game. Now,
do not in any way, shape, or form try to correlate the two. Because what you were talking about at 12-4 and where they are now, there is no comparison.
They're a 12-4 team if Ryan Tannehill plays the whole season.
Yeah, well, guess what? If.
Now, I was banking on 12-4 with Mariota as the quarterback, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah. Is the current Titans run, Floyd, affirmation that Mike Vrabel is a championship-caliber coach? Or does Vrabel still have a little ways to show us before we can say, hey, this guy is a championship-caliber coach? Before we get that, this is what Jarrell Casey said today about Mike Vrabel.
You know, they all get out there and they try to coach. All of them get involved. They all detailed. Vrabel making sure that not just the players is informed. He's making sure his coaches is informed. To have a guy like that leading us into this road victories, it's been unbelievable. The mindset he approached with every week is damn near like unspoken of a guy. He don't care about the win. He don't care about none of that happened. He's excited for that moment, but he's on to the next. His mindset is always on to the next. We can cherish the moments for a bit, but let's get back to the grind. Don't care about the excuses that you have, you're sore, you whatever. Get back in this building. Let's get back to it.
Floyd, do you think Mike Vrabel has proven he is a championship caliber coach?
Proven? Who do you consider championship caliber coach?
Well, Jimmy Johnson's going into the Hall of Fame. I think he's a championship caliber coach when he coached.
How can he have proven that?
By winning championships. Well, I'll give you an example here. Like Mike McCarthy's won a title. He's in Dallas. I don't think he's a championship caliber coach.
Right.
But everybody else seems to think that Sean McVay in L.A., who hasn't won a championship, is a championship caliber coach.
I guess it's up to definition by everybody. You know, what do you think it is? I mean, I certainly wouldn't think. I mean, is LaFleur a championship caliber coach?
God, no.
Well, he's got his team, the Green Bay Packers, to the championship game in his first year. Only time in the history of the franchise it's happened. Only time. In the history of the franchise.
You think Bill O'Brien's a good coach. You sit over there. Do you still think Bill O'Brien's a good coach, by the way?
You don't think LaFleur is a good coach.
No. Do you still think Bill O'Brien's a good coach?
What happens if he ends up in the Super Bowl?
What do you think of Billy?
Does he become a good coach then?
If he wins the Super Bowl, then we'll talk. But it's like I just said.
What about if he makes it to the Super Bowl?
Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl, and I don't think he's a championship caliber coach. Now,
well,
I'll say this.
I don't think you could look at anybody after a year or two and say they are anything. You know, that's why it's so difficult. I mean, people want to label all the time. You know, call them this, call them that, call them. And it's just like Derek, your Derek argument. I mean, four games for me does not mean he is one thing or the other. Not a bust, not a great player. Now, after a year like this, all that changes. Just like what you're saying. You know, I hate LaFleur unless he wins the Super Bowl. Then we'll talk.
Well, but even then, like, I'm not convinced. Like, I go back to Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy won a title in Green Bay, and yet I don't think he's a great coach. I think that there's a lot of guys around the league that are good coaches who don't even get credit for being good coaches. Andy Reid. Is Andy Reid a championship caliber coach? He's never won a title. He's, in fact, lost a lot of titles. I think Andy Reid is a championship caliber coach. I mean, Vrabel has
based on what?
Based on the fact that every year Andy's team is good. I mean, and every year Andy Reid has a good team. Every single year. Every year he's in Philadelphia, he had a good team. Every year in Kansas City, he's had a good team.
He got fired in Philadelphia, you know.
Yeah, if you got good teams and they're just not good enough, then you can get fired, which is what happened to Andy Reid. My point being, I think Andy Reid is a championship caliber coach.
No, you base it. There's no criteria.
Pete Carroll is a championship caliber coach.
You base it off of whether or not you like the guy. And if you like him, then he's a championship guy. If you don't like him, then he's not.
So are you saying that Vrabel hasn't shown you something over the last 2 weeks that make you think, you know, maybe this guy does have what it takes to take this team to the top?
You forget. This is no surprise to me. I mean, I have felt all along that Vrabel was a good coach.
Yeah, but that's how you act.
I think,
We don't know if you actually believe that because they could hire Dave Campo to be coach and you would be like, it's a great hire.
And I think he was a good hire from the beginning. And I think now you're seeing part of the reason why. I mean, you just heard Casey. I mean, the things he does as a football guy are the real deal. I mean, that's what they do. So I don't, you know, all that other stuff to me, whether or not you like them or whether, you know, I mean, none of that makes any difference to me.
I think Vrabel's found a way to be really demanding of his players without the players think, God, coach is being annoying.
Vrabel was a player. Vrabel is really, really a smart guy.
I mean, Mike Singletary was a player, too. He was a
very,
coach.
Very astute at what he does. And I think he spends a lot of time studying it to even get better at it. But my point being that he, all of those memories as a player, I think he's, you know, saying, okay, now, in his little office, he's saying, you know, if I was a player, what would I... And I think he's doing some of those things, and I think it's paying off. So, I mean, I think he's got a chance to be, you know, pretty good.
I think two things that work in Vrabel's favor. Number one, I think Vrabel has a great way of connecting with people. And it doesn't sound that way in his press conferences and in his interviews because I think Vrabel is really smart. And so there's nothing that Vrabel can really say in these interviews and press conferences that do a lot of positive, whereas if he says the wrong thing, it does a bunch of negative. And I just don't think that Vrabel wants to risk saying something negative, so he just tries to say something generic every time or say something whatever, and he's just tired because he feels like it's a waste of his time to do those press conferences and stuff like that. But I think that Vrabel is really good. Like, if you've ever, you know, been one-on-one with Vrabel, like off the air, whatever – like, Vrabel's a smart guy. He's a funny guy. He cracks jokes at people's expenses. He can be serious, all that kind of stuff. I think that plays a role into this, that he is really good at kind of leveling with the players and talking to the players, like, one-on-one and things of the like, etc. So I think that is kind of a positive for Mike Vrabel. I would say the other thing is I think Vrabel's got two coordinators who he really trusts, especially one in Dean Pease, who he really, 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 really trusts. And I would like to know, when all is said and done, how much Dean has helped Vrabel become a better coach. Because I think the one thing that Vrabel is trusted on in day one is that from day one is that Dean Pease can do the defense and that he doesn't have to worry about Dean and that he's learned probably a lot working with Dean in the capacity that Dean has, which is essentially Dean's defense. You know, they work together and Vrabel's in all the meetings and stuff like that, but I don't think Vrabel has to feel like a defensive coach because Dean is in charge of all of that.
Okay.
Do you not feel that way?
I don't know. I don't know what all you said. I think the key thing is this. I mean, it's not, you know, most head coaches, except for Bill, aren't known for the football they know. Mm-hmm. They're known for how they handle the team. Here's a great example. This is special teams coach.
Harbaugh?
Yes. He took over. So, it's, and it's not because he knew offense or he knew defense or he knew, you know, he did it because he knows how to work with the players. He knows, as a special teams coach, you know the team better than anybody else because you have to work with every single person on that roster. And so, you know, I think Vrabel is one of those guys. Vrabel speaks the language. Vrabel is, when he stands up in front of the team, he can say the right things. Mm-hmm. Now, it may not be, you know, written. It may not be the King's English. It may not be any of that. But he gets his point across. They understand what he's saying.
Do you think Vrabel and his coaching staff outcoached Harbaugh and his coaching staff this week?
Without a doubt.
I think especially the matchup of Arthur Smith versus Wink Martindale, I think Arthur owned that matchup.
I think they completely frustrated him. I mean, the biggest difference in the whole game from my standpoint was when they decided they had to throw the ball. And they started throwing the ball. And then from that point on, as I look back on it, I was thinking, keep doing that. Keep doing those things because that's not the way you're going to beat us. And that's the way it turned out.
Titans Monday, full bank of calls. We'll get to those. 615-737-1025. Jared of the GM, live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Let me tell you about my buddy, TJ Anderson. That's right. TJ Anderson's online at TJAndersonHomes.com. TJ Anderson, he is the man. If you are buying or selling your home, you got to get with TJ. I recently just purchased another home, and with TJ's help, we found a perfect location. We found the perfect home. We found everything that fits my needs. It was perfect with TJ. You'll feel the exact same way. It's easy. Go online to TJAndersonHomes.com, where thousands of people go every day so that they can check out the new tools such as market trends or analysis, etc. And you will take a look at homes and you will find the one that you probably want. And then you need to call TJ. He'll get you the best prices. He knows the market as well as you can. That's why I use TJ Anderson. You should too. TJ Anderson online at TJAndersonHomes.com. If you're selling, get with TJ because thousands of people go there every day. So you want your home featured just like TJ. TJ Anderson online at TJAndersonHomes.com. TJ Anderson's part of Benchmark Realty. That's my friend, TJ Anderson. Jared and the GM on Titans Monday. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
How much does this loss stain Lamar Jackson's season?
A little bit, not much. I was watching Get Up this morning with my boys, obviously Swagoo and Booger was on there, Ryan Clark, Dan Orlovsky, and all these folks. And a whole bunch of folks were talking about anybody that was critical of Lamar Jackson is idiotic. I want to announce to the world I'm an idiot because I'm going to be critical now. Let's be very, very clear. The man wasn't perfect. That wasn't his fault. It wasn't his fault. Don't get me wrong. I'm looking at John Harbaugh and the fact that, you know what, you got cats on your own teams calling themselves chokers. Because once again, you got to the playoffs and can't win a damn playoff game. You should have been better defensively. You shouldn't have been punched in the mouth. You should have found a way to prevent Derrick Henry from having 195 damn yards. Okay, just running roughshod over you. Somebody do something to him. I'm talking about the great Earl Thomas, who is a man, got shoved aside like a piece of paper. Turned around by Derrick Henry. I was shocked to see that. So that's props to Derrick Henry. Don't get me wrong, but you got to figure out a way.
Stephen A. on Lamar Jackson and the Titans win. And so Stephen A. says, not just Lamar's fault, but, you know, lay it at the hands of other people. What do you think Dean Pease exposed Lamar Jackson?
It's the same thing. I think people realize that. I think the people in the league realize it.
If you make Lamar throw, you will win.
If you can get him there. The problem is getting him there.
Yeah.
And that's been the issue for literally every team. That's why they're the number one scoring team in the league in the first quarter. Because they know they have to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they get behind, then it changes everything they want to do. So every game they go out there with the idea of, hey, we got to score at least 14 now in this quarter. And then if that happens, then they can do pretty much what they want.
Let's go to your phone, 615-737-1025. Zach is up next on Derrick Henry. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Zach.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me. It's been a while. I just wanted to call in and say, man, I remember a couple years ago when they were trying to squeeze every yard out of DeMarco Murray, and I kept calling and saying, man, I wish they would release the beast. You got a beast in Henry, and, oh, man, I'm so happy to be watching it now. I'm telling you, I feel like I'm going to get stabbed at Winghouse. I'm the only guy sitting there jumping up and down for the Titans, beating on the table and stuff. So still behind the team. I love Mike Vrabel. He's winning me over slowly but surely by mixing the Maserati in on some plays. And I'm excited, man. Happy Monday. Happy AFC Championship week. And let's tighten up, not lighten up, man. I love you guys. Miss you. And go Titans.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Zach.
Texter to the text line says, come on, GM. Just congratulate Derrick Henry. And then has it with a little smiley face.
I don't know. What do I have to say about Derrick? I have never. He's the leading rusher in the league.
And touchdowns.
And touchdown. But, I mean, he's number one in the league. I mean, I don't know how much that is. These people that like text that in have no idea what that means.
Well, they've been listening
to the
show.
Other than it's a number.
They've been listening
but
to the show for
forever.
They have
no idea how hard it is to do that. And if you can do it, I mean, there's something special about you. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I love Derrick. I don't know. I can't imagine a better face of the franchise than Derrick
so,
right now.
So I will. I mean, I have a pretty good memory, and I will go back to. I remember July 3rd. I was in New York at ESPN New York doing the show, and you were obviously here, and we were talking about. And one of the questions was, the Titans will have a good season if what? And you said, if Derrick Henry runs the ball. That if Derrick Henry runs the ball, they will have a good season. Now, you were skeptical of whether or not Derrick Henry would be able to be effective, but that was kind of the way you looked at it, was that if Derrick Henry runs the ball effectively, the Titans will have a good season. Well, they started off the year, Derrick Henry was running the ball okay, but he wasn't running the ball all that effectively. Then Tannehill becomes the quarterback, and all of a sudden Derrick Henry's unstoppable. And so it's unfair to say that a lot of Derrick Henry's outbreak doesn't have to do with Tannehill, and Tannehill's a key role in that because, let's be honest, how many deep balls to Khalif Raymond is Marcus Mariota hitting? And I think that is the difference, is Tannehill has changed a lot of all of this that has taken Derrick Henry the next
level. Right, and the opposite of that is true, too. I think part of Tannehill's success, a large part of it, is he doesn't have to do what happened to Lamar here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, back up and throw the ball 59 times. Instead, he just needs to. He's won two playoff games throwing for less than 100 yards. So, I mean, what does that tell you?
Charles is up next on Ryan Tannehill. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Charles.
I want to say about Tannehill, man. I know he ain't threw for over 100 yards, but man, dude did doing a good job, man, managing the game and making plays and plays that needed to be made, you know.
So Charles, I totally agree with you. Thank you for your call. I completely agree with the idea that Tannehill is managing the game as well as you can possibly manage it. I mean, that he is line of scrimmage, what he does. And we don't know, you know, on the Raymond touchdown, right? We know that that's probably what Arthur Smith called. But if Tannehill gets to the line and he doesn't, and he thinks they're dropping six guys back, he's checking out of that play. And he's probably going to run it to Derrick Henry. And how much of is he changing where the run is going at the line, and how much is he changing the protection at the line of scrimmage for the runs? And all of that plays a role into it. And to your point, like, I think we all know this week Ryan Tannehill is going to have to throw for more than 100 yards. Ryan Tannehill's probably going to have to throw for more than 200 yards. I think Ryan Tannehill can do it. I mean, I think that if Ryan Tannehill, if you have to go out and score 40 points this week, you may not get to 40, but Ryan Tannehill will give you a chance to get to 40 this week. And that's where I think, you know, if you know that you can do it, just because you don't do it in these two games doesn't mean that you can't do it, doesn't mean that you're bad for not doing it
or anything of the like.
Well, nobody can be sad about the results of the last two games. I mean, I don't care who you are or what you're doing. You know, you can't be disappointed, even though your role in what went on may have been fairly insignificant. I mean, let's face it, you just won two playoff games.
Yeah, but
you're
your role's
on your
not,
way to the championship game.
Your role's not insignificant when you have three touchdowns in a game that you scored 28 points.
And I'm not saying anything he's done has been insignificant. But I think, you know, I mean, we scored 28 points, and we got and Derek got his passing. So, you know, Tannehill had more rushing touchdowns than Derek did. And so, I mean, it's what he's doing, scoring those points, is significant. I mean, it is giant. So, I mean, I think he's the perfect guy for this team right now, just the right guy.
Well, you know, this is funny, and it's a little revisionist, but it's not completely, because I remember when they lost to New Orleans, and I watched the game, but I was at the game, and I would go back into the club level, and I would look up at the screens, and I'd watch the Jets and Steelers game, because the Titans needed the Steelers to lose in order to make the playoffs. And so I was just kind of watching it, and I remember watching that Saints game and leaving and calling my dad and saying, is it wrong that I feel like the Titans won today? Because the Titans lost, but they got the win they needed, and they played tough against the Saints. It's just Jerome Boger's crew totally screwed them out of the game. And that was when you lost to New Orleans on that hit on Khalif Raymond that was a bad call that they didn't call. And I really felt like that was a big game for me, because you hung in against the New Orleans Saints without Derrick Henry. That was a big deal to me. And so that's ever since then, I've felt great about Tannehill. I mean, I really think that Tannehill, in spite of his lack of numbers, I think Tannehill has been fantastic. I mean, just fantastic. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. Have we ever seen anything like Derrick Henry? Plus your phones, Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we're streaming on The Game Nashville app.
Third and goal for Tennessee. Shotgun for Tannehill. Tannehill fakes the pitch. Tannehill, second effort, touchdown! Titans are pouring it on here in Baltimore.
Yeah, he got a great block from the rookie right guard, Nate Davis. But Tannehill, a willing runner, former wide receiver in his college days at Texas A&M. Watch the block by 64 right there on Fort. Enough to get Tannehill the yard he needed for the touchdown.
How did he get into the end zone on that option play is beyond me.
Yeah, I think he did. We're about to see it right here, I believe. But I think he did a great job of cutting back off of Davis's block. You know, like Fat said, I think Davis was starting to get the guy moving. And then just about the time he cut, Davis ran him out of the picture.
There's something about Ryan Tannehill that if you need to get 1 yard, he will find a way to get the 1 yard.
He is a big old athletic guy.
Oh, yes.
You know, he's not small, and he's certainly not clumsy, or, you know, he can run, he can do it all.
And so, again, when Tannehill runs the option play, they go up 28-6. I got up and I said, ball game. That is the game. Ball game. 28-6, 4:16 to go in the third quarter. And I said, ball game. And my dad, oh my God, he was like, whoa now, there's still a lot of game to be played. Whoa now. And after watching the Kansas City game yesterday, I would agree that if this were the team this week, I would not be saying ball game.
No, not until that last whistle.
No, would not be saying ball game. And just like the first Kansas City game, not until the last whistle at all. Do you have any idea what's going to be happening in this game? Let's go back to your phones. As promised, Cedric is up next. Cedric.
Cedric's happy.
Oh, yeah.
My man. In my Denzel voice, baby. Ooh, how you doing out there, Lamar? I hope you're sitting at home chilling, baby. Can you hear me in Baltimore, dog? Come see me, man. Me and you can talk. We can drink a beer together and watch my Titans in Kansas City. I know we ain't supposed to talk about Kansas City, Jared, but I just wanted to invite Lamar to come chill with me. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, man, listen, Jared. That is a difference between explosive offenses and dominant teams. And what we got, man, going on is we got a dominant team going that all started back in week 7 when Tannehill came in and injected life and belief into the team like I talked to the GM about in week 7. And I told y'all, man, it's a dangerous team that starts to believe. And I watched them Titans in the tunnel, and I told everybody at my crib watching the game, ooh, we look like the cat that ate the canary, and Baltimore has no idea what's in for him, baby. And guess what? I ain't going to talk about it, Jared, but I do got the same thing to say about this Kansas City Chiefs, man, when I call you later on this week, baby. Holla.
Thank you for the call, Cedric. I will say this. For Cedric, Adam in Portland, who has been blowing up the text line with the I got my prediction close to being right line, I did not see this kind of game coming.
No,
I did not see this kind of game. This was the best case scenario of what would happen for the Titans. Yeah,
Cedric and Adam and those guys like that have not wavered. I mean, they have been convinced from the beginning. So, I don't know. Maybe it's paying off for them.
So, I would say, like, going back again to the way the Titans won this game, that was best case scenario. Like, all these people were getting mad at me. And I was like, oh, Titans Monday, coming up on Monday. And people were like, you picked the Ravens. Yeah, I picked the Ravens. So did, like, 98% of America picked the Ravens. I picked the Ravens 31-28, which says, hey, I thought the Titans would have had a chance at the end of the game, one way or another, to win, lose, draw, whatever. I mean, this was best case scenario. We talked about all week, like, oh, God, if there's any way they could get up 14-0, how would that just change everything? And I'll say it on this Kansas City game. If they can get up 14-0, that would help. That would go a long way. Would it go as far as it does against Baltimore? Probably not.
No.
But
maybe a total of about 5 plays.
I will say this. I don't think the Titans will blow a 24-0 lead. If the Titans get a 24-0 lead on Sunday, I don't think they will blow it. If for no other reason than the fact that, I mean, Derrick Henry's going to get the ball then, and the Chiefs' run defense is what it is. And we will be keeping our eyes all week on Chris Jones, their defensive tackle, because that may be one of the biggest stories of the week is whether or not this mamma jamma is going to play. But, I mean, again, Saturday's game was near perfect. I mean, there were some screw-ups. Crookshank running out of bounds and then going and downing the punt at the 9-yard line, and all of a sudden it becomes a touchback. Now, I did not know that rule, but it's not my job to know that rule. When you're a gunner on the punt team, I feel like every gunner in the league knows what the rules are about downing punts. Like, that was a bad play. The drive before the end of the half was a bad play. Like, you had a couple bad plays. Corey Davis dropped the ball was a bad play. But at the same time, I mean, you played a near-perfect game, and they did not. They dropped passes. They made bad throws. They didn't get first downs when they went for it. I mean, they did not, and you took advantage of it. And Kansas City, when they give you stuff, you're going to have to take advantage of that too. Let's go back to your phones. Steve on Dean Pease on Lamar. Go ahead, Steve.
Start again, Steve.
But I noticed that it looked like, I think it's Correa, the linebacker. They had him flexed out at about a 9 on one play. And anyway, he forced pursuit out. Lamar Jackson forced him outside and pursuit caught him. But the thing was, he followed him and stayed inside eye about 2.5 yards just in case he cut back. And I thought, man, they've been coached up well, you know, for his option attack.
Thank you for your call, Steve.
I think you're exactly right, Steve. I mean, I thought they did an outstanding job. I thought, and we've been saying all week, I mean, the thing that concerned me the most was him running the ball on the edges, you know, out because there was always so much space out there. And as fast as he is, you know, even as good a job as we did against him, I mean, if Logan Ryan doesn't make a shoestring tackle, that 130-yard run is maybe to the house, you know. So, I mean,
that was another mistake, Evans jumping at Lamar like that.
But I thought we did a good job of stretching him along, you know, forcing him out towards the the boundary. And once he got close to the boundary, he went on out. You know, he's a quarterback. That's what's going to happen. So, but anyway, I thought they did an outstanding job of that, both from a game plan standpoint and an execution standpoint.
Do you have as much a problem with that last drive before the end of the first half as I did?
I don't think I remember the last drive before the end of the half.
So you get the sack. So they're, I think they're pinned inside their 15. You get the sack on Lamar on second down. You call timeout, which sets up 3rd and 16 from the 9. You play a soft zone. Hollywood Brown picks up like 30. Then they move the ball. At one point, I think they hit Willie Snead over the middle and with about 40 seconds left. Then he throws the ball down the sidelines to Hollywood where you tackled him at the 3. And then Landry almost sacked Lamar that would have ended the half, and they ended up settling for the field goal. And to me, 3rd and 16 at the 9, you got to stop them there, get the ball back, and then really have a chance to put some pressure on Baltimore and take the momentum into the locker room. And the 3rd and 16 and the ball to Hollywood, I thought, were both balls that the Titans should have contested a little bit more.
Well, I mean, the one to Brown, that was an out. I mean, the 38-yarder, that was an outstanding throw.
You're talking about the one down the sideline.
Yeah, I will give Lamar that one. I mean, that was truly outstanding. The 26-yarder on the 3rd and 16 was versus zone for us, which is fairly commonplace.
But that soft of a zone, I mean, like, you know what they have to do on 3rd and 16. He's not going to run it. I don't know why they didn't at least man up a little bit on a 3rd and 16 at the 9. I mean, you got a chance to put the game away. When they punt it to you, you take over around midfield with 2 timeouts and 2 minutes. You got a chance to put the ball game away. And I hated that drive. I hated that
drive.
Well,
they ended up with what, kicking a field goal?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not what you want. It's not ideal, but at least you got them. I mean, they came down. They had 1st and 4 on the 4.
I know.
With 11 seconds left and threw an incomplete pass.
And then Landry almost sacked him.
Yeah, if you end up in a position where you're forcing that to kick a field goal, you're in pretty good shape.
Frank is up next on the Titan coaching staff. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, Jared, I got a question to ask you. No pun intended, but are you ready to crow about that coaching staff, how you tore them up at the beginning of the year?
I already apologized to the offensive line coach.
Well, what about Vrabel?
We just spent the top of the hour on Vrabel.
Well, you tore them up at the beginning of the year, and now you're jumping on the bandwagon.
What do you mean by jumping on the bandwagon?
Because you said they were, you wanted them, their heads at the beginning of the year because you were the cheerleader for Mariota, and you said about him getting sad because of Taylor Lewan. And I called and told you, thank you, Taylor, and I still thank
you. You
did
say that. You remember
that.
Because
if it wasn't him, it wouldn't be there.
There is truth in what you're saying. Thank you for your call, Frank. There is truth in the sense that Frank did call the show and say Taylor Lewan, by getting suspended, did the Titans a favor because it allowed them to realize that they could bench Mariota, and they did. And benching Mariota was the turning point of the season. I mean, I'm not trying to dog on Marcus. We talk about this all the time. Benching Mariota, I mean, there's no way. Remember when they benched him and were like, is the season over anyways? Is it too late? Well, they're trying to save the season. And now they're in the AFC Championship game.
And Marcus understands. Marcus, smart guy.
I mean, you saw Marcus on the sidelines with Tannehill. I mean, I don't think
he's not, you know, he doesn't appear to me to be bitter. He doesn't, I mean, it is what it is. And I think he understands that and really has been very, very good about, you know, taking the backup position, which doesn't surprise anybody. You know, once again, I think if you look at these two quarterbacks and the way they handled it, I mean, I'm sure there were points in time during those first 4, 5, 6 weeks where Tannehill would go home and, you know, say to his wife, hey, I mean, I know I could do better than that if I got a chance, but wasn't going to get a chance. Then all of a sudden, boom, there it is.
More of your phone, 615-737-1025, plus is the satisfaction there. I'm talking about the true Titans fans from 2000 and 2008 are the true, did it feel good? And are you allowed to celebrate the fact that you ended the Ravens' dream season? We'll discuss that next. And does Floyd feel some retribution for 2000? We'll discuss. 615-737-1025. Preds fans, do not miss this Wednesday night Smashville Live. They'll be in Bellevue at Brewhouse 100, located at 8098 Highway 100. The show starts at 7. This week's guest will be country music legend Vince Gill. A limited number of autographs or pictures will be available, so be sure to get there early this Wednesday night Smashville Live. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. Jared and the GM. It's Titans Monday, and it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Second and 10 for Baltimore. Opening drive for the Ravens after the Titans were forced to punt. Jackson tosses high and intercepted off the deflection. It's Kevin Byard, and the Titans come up with a turnover. Mark Andrews, it bounced off his hands. 31-yard return with a flag down.
Logan Ryan in chase position here, but you
after
can see.
After the interception during the return, personal foul. Offense, number 8.
We just beat ourselves. You know, I had a lot of mistakes on my behalf. 3 turnovers, that shouldn't happen.
You're right, Lamar. It shouldn't have happened. Floyd, have you heard this story before? Ball bounces off somebody. Somebody else picks it up and takes it back in the Titans-Ravens game?
Yeah, that's all too familiar, huh?
2000 ball off of Eddie George's shoulder into the arms of Ray Lewis in for a touchdown, and the Titans lose to the Ravens, and it was a heartbreak. And then 2009, the Titans lose a heartbreak because Algie Crumpler fumbled the ball and Lindale White fumbled the ball, and the Ravens win that game. And it was crazy because when the Titans hit the touchdown to Khalif Raymond, I told my dad, I said, you know, in the 2 other divisional round games against the Ravens, the Titans didn't even score 14 points. And here the Titans are up 14-0, and they scored a total of 10 points in each game. And so a lot of people have been texting into the text line, and a lot of people have been asking, Jared, how do you feel about the kids in Baltimore now and all those kids in their dream season? And how do you feel about the fact that the Ravens, those 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds are crying? And let me say this. Yesterday morning, I went to the Baltimore Suns website and I read their articles and I read their columns and I read what those writers said, and I loved every freaking second of it. I'm a subscriber to The Athletic, and I went to The Athletic's website and I looked for Baltimore. You know, each city has their own page. And I, by the way, congratulations to Mitch Light. He's the new The Athletic editor of the Nashville site. But I looked and looked, and I went to the Baltimore page all night waiting for there to be a story about the Ravens and what would it be. And they hadn't updated it. So the only thing I saw on the top of the Baltimore page was this headline: always ahead of the game, John Harbaugh has adapted and he has his team ready for the playoffs. And I was thinking, ha ha, no he doesn't. No he doesn't. And yes, I took satisfaction when they showed those grumpy Raven fans and you could see the looks on their faces in the 3rd and 4th quarter. And I loved every second of it, and you should have loved it more than anybody else because the Ravens stole your Super Bowl, Floyd Reese. They stole it. And now for you in their dream season, 14-2, league MVP, and you put a foot up their rear end and took it from them. Floyd, you should have satisfaction for that win.
They don't. I mean, this game, you know, you can't compare what happened way back when in this game. I mean, you got, there's nobody there that's the same. They're all different. That being said, what they are going to have to live with for the next forever, kind of like we are here, is that it did happen. You know, you were the best team in the league, and you were 14-2, and you played against the Titans, who were 9-7. And they beat you. And that's going to be, you know, one of those things that they're going to say, remember what happened in 2019.
And they'll remember it as they screwed up. I mean, you heard Lamar at the end of that clip. You know, I had turnovers. I mean, they dropped passes. They did a lot of things wrong in this game. You know, they'll remember Earl Thomas talking all that smack last week and then getting double stiff-armed by Derrick Henry.
Yeah, this is going to be, I think this becomes one of those things that you're talking, you know, with Lamar, it's going to be.
Oh, Lamar is a choker until he ever starts winning some playoff
games. It'll be okay. You know, when we get into a big game, you know, it's going to be, all right, what are we going to do? You know, what about the playoffs? Is this going to be similar to the playoffs? What are you going to do to make sure that it isn't like the playoffs? And for sure, if they get to the playoffs next year, it's just going to be more of the same, just compounded.
So I got a bunch of different texts into the text line. Did Jared see the national story about all the grief counselors for the 11-year-old kids in the Baltimore school system today? I mean, I hope they cried.
That's great.
I read one column in the Baltimore Sun that was basically about putting the Ravens loss in perspective, and it talked about how heartbreaking it was that the Ravens lost and so on and so forth. And I loved every second of it in the first half of the article about how painful it was and how could this happen to us this season. But then as I got into it, the crux of the article was about all the crime and violence in Baltimore and the corruption from the mayor's office and how the Ravens united a city that had so much bad going in it with all the crime and everything else. And then I felt kind of bad for enjoying the first half of the story when you realize the second half of the story is all about the murders.
Somebody
and all about the,
oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa now, hey, don't bring this on me. Don't bring the seriousness stuff on me. I don't want any part of that. But I do. Shane texts into the text line and says, hell yeah, I have a sense of satisfaction, but it'll be better if they finish it and get the championship ring and let them kids cry because I did in 2000, Shane says. I turned to my dad. It was funny. You know, I told the story on the air last week that when Ray Lewis took the ball into the end zone, the Ravens went up 14 with 5 minutes to go. And I turned to my dad, and I remember it like it was yesterday at then Adelphia Coliseum, now Nissan Stadium. And I said, Dad, are we going to lose? And he looked at me and he goes, yes. And I was like, what? Titans don't lose. This is a dream season. This team's not supposed to lose. This team's got Steve McNair. They don't lose. And so with 5 minutes to go in the game, I said, Dad, are the Titans going to win? And he looked at me and goes, well, I don't like saying yes on anything like that, but it's pretty doggone close. At that point, my dad freaked out when the Ravens scored. When the Ravens scored that first touchdown down by, what was it, whatever, 22? By the way, Harbaugh, what an idiot. Why did he go for two when they scored the touchdown? Don't you score, kick, then go for it when you have to go for it?
I would.
But he went for it at the jump? Like, what's he thinking?
I don't know.
So, Harbaugh, when they scored, my dad's offering too much time. Here they come. Here it is. Like, so on and so forth. And when they didn't get the two, I go, Dad, they have to get a touchdown, 2-point conversion, which they just missed, then an onside kick, then a touchdown, and then a 2-point conversion. He's like, I know, but I just don't feel it. Just, you know, I can get a little worried about that. Now, if you run into that situation this week where there are 7 minutes to go and they need a touchdown, 2-point conversion, touchdown, 2-point conversion.
Too much time.
There's way too much time for that team. Let's go to your phones. Daniel is up next on Jared and the GM. What's up, Daniel?
Oh, yes, sir. How you doing tonight?
Good.
Oh, man. I wanted to talk to you about just taking so much pleasure in this win. So my brother, unfortunately, is a Baltimore fan for him, unfortunately. So we, you know, during the last game, during the game before, during the Pats game, he was like, you guys beat the Pats, you know, this and that. And then we were all buddy-buddy, and then we won. I said, all right, next Saturday, buddy. And he said, don't take this the wrong way, but I'm not worried. And we'll just say that it got heated from there. I tried to tell him, you know, we got the number one rusher, number one quarterback rating, the most points. We passed them that week for the most points scored in the second half. And I said, you ought to be a little bit worried. He said, no, not worried. And anyway, it got more serious from there. I'm not sure if we're even on talking terms at this point.
Well, I'll say this. Yeah. Thank you for your call, Daniel. I loved when they showed crowd shots of the Baltimore fans. They were distraught.
Yeah, oh, yeah. They
love it.
Their fan base, and I can't remember what our fan base was like, you know, during that time. Now, they were obviously excited, but if you listen to the fans in Baltimore, I mean, there is no doubt in their mind.
Oh, yes.
You know?
This was the dream season.
Oh, yeah. We're on our way. We've got Lamar. We're in good shape. And, you know, you guys have no chance. And who are we going to play in the Super Bowl kind of thing? You know?
CBS is dying a death inside right now. They wanted Lamar versus Mahomes. I mean, that would have sold ads. That would have had people glued to the TV. Now it's going to be Derrick Henry versus Mahomes, but they wanted Lamar versus Mahomes. If they couldn't get Brady versus Lamar or Brady versus Mahomes, then they wanted Lamar versus Mahomes, and they're not going to get it. Let's go to John, who's up next here on the future of the Titans. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Jared. Hey, Floyd.
Hey.
Hey, guys. John from Pittsburgh.
Go. Hey, give us the take. Go.
Okay, let me tell you. All is good in the world, my friend. I can't tell you how happy I am over here. After 20 years, we get our revenge on those damn rat birds. I mean, I really feel bad for the 7 and 8-year-olds. I do feel bad for them.
I don't.
I know you don't, Jared, but, you know, my son is a Baltimore Ravens fan, and I had to watch him cry. But I didn't care.
Good.
I didn't care.
Good.
My man, we won, and I'll tell you what. Watching those 35, 50-year-old fans look so miserable made me feel so damn good. I listened to Raven Baltimore radio all night, Saturday night, listening to their stories and hearing their heartbreak. It made me feel so good.
Oh, I bet it was awesome. And
now I can move on and watch John Robinson and Mike Vrabel lead us to 2-3 Super Bowls.
Okay. Calm down. Okay. Like, you do realize in 2002, the last time the Titans went to the AFC title game, they came back the next year, and their quarterback won league MVP, and the Titans have still not been back to an AFC title game since then. This is why when the Titans beat Pittsburgh on the Joe Nedney kicks in 2002, which was a wild game in and of itself, Eddie George got knocked out with a concussion. I mean, it was crazy. Hall of Fame coach Bill Cowher, who does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame coach Bill Cowher coaching Pittsburgh. Joe Nedney makes the first kick, misses the second kick, makes the third kick that counts. Titans win. I'm not going to say I took it for granted because I know the AFC Championship game is a big deal, but I definitely didn't cherish it like I should have. And I think if you're a Titan fan, you should really cherish the fact that your team is in the AFC Championship game before we even get to anything else.
Yeah, I mean, simply because I know in the eyes of the league, in the eyes of the fans, I mean, let's face it, you know, this is a big deal, and everybody's excited about it, but the league even treats it differently. If you make the playoffs just as a wild card, just win a division, it's nice, but the league doesn't. Now, you get to the championship game, it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have parties. They have all kinds of things.
You're going to be able to get us into those league parties?
You get all kinds of stuff. City? I mean, there's events just about everywhere.
You going to be able to get us in there in these league parties?
No.
Come on, GM. I mean, you're the one who told me you slapped Paul Tagliabue's hand away when he tried to screw with your hat.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, get us into these league events then.
Oh, what's that going to do? That's not going to help.
You're the GM. You got to come up with something. Speaking of the GM, his three things. Can you find three things you didn't like? We'll get to that next. Three up, three down. Floyd's three things he liked, three things he didn't like. A reminder, we will be in Kansas City. Jared and the GM live from Kansas City Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with special editions of Jared and the GM. So get excited about all of that. Time now to give away. That's right. Time now to give away a pair of tickets to see Foreigner at Ascend Amphitheater on June 24th of 2020. Be the first person to text in which Titan or Titans Floyd Reese gave a game ball to earlier today. If you can remember who Floyd gave a game ball to, you text in at 615-737-1025. You will win a pair of tickets before you can buy them to see Foreigner with special guests Kansas and Europe at Ascend Amphitheater on Wednesday, June 24th. So get excited about that. Jared and the GM, AFC Championship Game edition of Titans Monday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.